Welcome to the Electronic Entertainment Expo Extravaganza, only on GamingUncensored.com.
Hey, what is up? Welcome to episode 4 of E4 2017. It is our coverage of the Sony press conference. I am Tommy. Right over there is Jamie. How you doing, man?
Dude, it's early.
It is early. You can kind of hear it in our voices.
It is early. We are not awake yet.
We got the scratchiness going on. So
broadcasters don't do this.
But we've got so much freaking stuff to cover, and we got to get an early start at it. So
So
we're going to talk about Sony in this one, because we saw the Sony press conference last night, and we got lots to talk about.
Oh, this should be interesting, because we watched the IGN coverage, and everybody at IGN was like, all right, cool, Sony. And they all were like, this is awesome, I'm all good, think they did a good job. And we don't know if we feel that way.
Yeah.
Well, it's a really good software. Only problem is we're not going to see it for like 8,000 months.
Yeah. So it was, I'll speak for me at least on this, underwhelming. Like I really felt underwhelmed by it because of both what they showed, but a lot of what they didn't show. Like there's a massive title that we were expecting that was just not there. And so should we just jump right into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Get going on. So it started, as Sony does, with a fun musical performance for Uncharted. And it was really cool. Like, I gave them the musical performances, which the sound worked great for that. And then the sound died for the next, like, 5 minutes of the show. And so that was not fun. And again, we understand technical issues. However, like the PC game show, that's like some guys trying to figure it out. Like for them, I have a lot of grace for those technical difficulties.
Right.
Sony, multi-billion-dollar corporation, should be able to get the sound right. So,
Sony's got like three guys running boards I kind of agree. You know they did a walkthrough.
You're right.
You know they did.
Absolutely.
And they had trouble a lot of the show.
Yes.
I mean, like 20
minutes. I don't know if a lot of the show.
Well, 20 minutes in, you went, come on, sound guy.
Yeah, there was something else that went wrong. It wasn't as smooth as it could have been. And they did the same thing that we've been talking about at E3 this year, where everybody's trying to do these tight press conferences that show games, and I even said that I feel like everybody's doing this because Sony has done this for the past couple of years, but Sony took it to a whole nother level of trying to do that, if there was just game after game after game with very little kind of in-between stuff here and there. Our boy Sean came out a few times, but not a lot, and there wasn't a lot of talking. It was just, here's another game.
Boy, Sean is odd.
He is odd. Just like, a bit of an awkward dude.
Let me just mention, Sean, if you haven't heard this, come visit us. Let us come hang out with us, because we want to know what your deal is. come see us. We'd be glad to talk to you, because we want to know kind of what you're thinking, kind of what you're feeling. My thing with Sean is I feel like that he likes his job, but he's not really an out front kind of dude.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like if you were standing on stage at a Sony press conference in front of however many people were in that building, you could do it and you'd be okay at it. But
I wouldn't look comfortable.
Right.
Because it's not my skill set.
Right.
Which is perfectly okay. Yeah. I get that. But you'd think they'd want to find somebody that maybe that's more their skill set to put out there.
Right.
But he did fine. I mean, what they did well is they did put him out there for a time, you know?
Right.
And so he didn't have a lot of chance to be super awkward, which is good with people who are socially awkward like me.
Yeah.
That's what you do. You just don't expose them to the social awkwardness as much as you can, which is smart.
Right.
But Yeah, after that, it was just a lot of games, which is good, and we like a lot of games. But the whole thing was like an hour and 10 minutes long, which is weird for Sony, who usually goes like 2 hours that does these really long conferences.
We prepped for 2 hours.
Yeah.
We're like, okay.
And then we were like, what do we do with all this time we have now? So we played Zelda, of course. Which is what you should do if you have all this extra time left. It didn't feel like it had the pizzazz of Sony conferences past. Sony conferences, because they obviously kind of ebb and flow. The past 2 or 3 years, Sony's been pretty on top of things. This year was just kind of meh, which was what Microsoft was too. Microsoft was just kind of meh. And so, strangely enough, Nintendo has a chance to kind of like run away with E3 today. I doubt they will.
Let's back up a minute, because... Because you're saying Sony was meh, basically because they didn't show, not because of this, but they didn't show one or two pieces of software that we really expected, really wanted to see, but they showed a ton of great software, and the timing is also an upsetting thing. If they had said, you know, you're gonna have all of this within the next 6 months, we would have... Wow!
Sure. Yeah.
Let's not say that they did...
Well, I'm going to add one more thing to that list of complaints. They didn't show anything new.
Well, there is
so
that.
We didn't see the games that... The big one title, again, we'll get to, which is The Last of Us 2. Right. They didn't show The Last of Us 2, which is the big title for Sony right now, right?
Yeah.
We didn't see that. We didn't see anything new. Almost every game we saw last year at E3.
Right.
It was very much what I, on Twitter, I put, Sony E3 2017 was a rehash of 2016. It's going to be what 2018 is. Like, we're going to see all these same games again next year, too.
Right.
Like, the fact that there wasn't anything new is a big deal to me. And then the fact that the release dates for all of these are a year out for most of the good-looking stuff. Like, those three things equal meth to me. Even though they're good games, they're good games we're not seeing soon, and they're not new games.
I mean, let's set that up. They appear to be great games.
Some of them.
I mean,
not all of them, but they have three that I saw.
I think
maybe four.
I think Days Gone is going to be great.
Days Gone is the one I don't know about.
God of War
is great.
Right.
Yeah.
Detroit
for us.
Yeah,
I think that one's going to be for a lot of people, not as much. But you and I love David Cage and Quiet Dream. So Detroit
for us.
Which,
by the way, GameSpot guys didn't like David Cage.
I know.
What?
Surprised
what?
By that.
Holy cow. The guy, one of the guys, I don't know their names. I really shouldn't. Need to look them up. But one of the guys was like, yeah, David Cage will do what he does. He thinks he's the greatest writer to ever walk the face of the planet. I'm like, wow!
Yeah, it was a little brutal.
Wow!
Which, I mean, whatever, more power to him. But for us, that's a big game. We're pretty pumped about that. It'll look cool. Surprisingly, maybe the Spider-Man game looks phenomenal.
Yeah, the Spider-Man game looks really good. And let's be honest, we're going to play Uncharted. So that's four.
Yeah, but no, I'm not giving Uncharted that, even though I think Uncharted is going to be good, because Uncharted, The Lost Legacy, is a standalone expansion for Uncharted 4.
Dude, come on. It's Uncharted.
I'm not giving any standalone expansion that level of credibility. Like, that level of, like, it's going to be great, but how long, is it a full Uncharted game? How long is it going to be? There's a bunch of questions like that. And it's not Nathan Drake.
I
love Chloe.
Right.
But Uncharted is so tied to Nathan Drake. I am not looking forward to The Lost Legacy anywhere like I've looked forward to any other of those in the franchise.
Right, but here's my thing. I agree with you. Like, I just found out that, I found out last night that the Dishonored 2, quote-unquote, DLC is a standalone thing, which I didn't realize. I feel the way that you're feeling about this, about that, but this is Uncharted.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like you're gonna, like, I don't want to say what you're saying. I understand why you feel that way, because I know when we play it, when it comes out, we're probably gonna eat it. We're probably gonna fire it up and go, we were wrong. And so it's kind of one of those things that I understand where you're coming from. Makes total sense. It's not Drake. It's a standalone thing. But this
is my thing. I don't doubt it's going to be good. I'm not trying to say it's a bad game. It's not, to me, on the level of God of War or Spider-Man or even, for us, Detroit. Like, there's different tiers in here, right?
Right.
The Uncharted 4 standalone expansion is a step down from those games. It's great, and I'm glad they showed it off. I'm glad that they started to show with it, but I think it's a perfectly fine thing to start to show with. I think it's a really good, solid title for them.
Right.
Uncharted 5 would have blown our minds, right?
Yeah.
Uncharted The Lost Legacy, which, again, we saw last year. This one's actually coming soon, which, thank goodness, because it's not a new thing. It's, again, Uncharted 4 expansion.
So
it's at a different level.
So let's chase a little rabbit here.
Yeah.
If Uncharted 5 comes out, and it's not Drake, because Drake ain't here no more.
Sure.
Are you going to feel the same way about Uncharted 5?
No, because it'll be the next game in the canon. You know what I'm saying?
So if Uncharted 5 is Chloe, which...
it could be.
They might be going that way.
Sure.
You're back in it.
I mean, I'm not
going
to say a blanket statement because I have to see it first, you know? But it's the same way that, like, we're really pumped about Kingdom Hearts 3. And that's been a big story of this E3, is that Kingdom Hearts 3 is finally getting here.
Right.
Kingdom Hearts 2 came out in 2005 or 2006.
Which, they said that last night.
Yeah, we were
like,
both like,
wow!
What the crap? Right? But there have been a bunch of Kingdom Hearts games that have come out in between Kingdom Hearts 2 and Kingdom Hearts 3.
Right.
But we're not excited about those. There's something about those games that continue
cabbages.
The legacy. Sure.
Cabbage,
I mean, there's diehard fans of certain games that are going to be excited about those in-between games. But for me, even as a diehard Uncharted fan, I love the franchise. Again, I'm going to play this, and it's going to be good. I don't have any doubts about that. But it's not the same as the next level up. It's not a new engine. It's not a massive graphics improvement. It's not... looking like any kind of new gameplay or whatever. It's going to be a fun story in a world that we know, and I'm excited about that. But it's different. You know what I'm saying? Like, it doesn't fit in with kind of the bigger excitement thing. I know it's a weird, nuanced argument.
Yeah.
But in my head, it makes a lot of sense.
I understand. I understand what you're saying, but that's exactly right. It's a weird, nuanced argument.
Sure. But, I mean, like, I don't care to see more Uncharted The Lost Legacy at E3. Like, I'm not going to go seek out a stage demo of that. It's coming in August, and I'm going to play it when it gets here, and I'll be excited about it. But I kind of already know what I need to know about it, you know? Like, there's nothing about it that's getting me super excited. So we're on this already, and so that's where we started. Let's just kind of progress through the stuff that they did, what they showed off. So we started off with Uncharted, and like we knew from last year, because this is going to be a theme of what we knew from last year, it's Chloe this time, which is cool, and let me be clear, a female protagonist in the Uncharted universe seems really fun.
That's the coolest thing ever,
yeah. I'm pretty pumped about that. Female protagonists are becoming a bigger and bigger deal in games, and I think that is a ridiculously good thing for the video game industry. Not just because, and I want to be really clear about this, not just because I think it's going to appeal to more women gamers, which I think it will, but I think it's really good as a straight white male, the most privileged person in the world, you know, to play as characters that aren't straight white males. Like, I appreciate the ability to play a video game where the main character is different than me in ethnicity or race or gender or whatever. I find that a fun experience. I find that an enlightening experience. And so, great that it's probably going to draw more women into the Uncharted franchise. I think that's awesome. But also great for the men that are already part of the Uncharted franchise that are going to play this and love it and get to see a different perspective.
Now, this brings up an interesting question because I've been thinking about this in Dishonored 2 because you can play as Corori, you can play as Emily. And, well, I don't know, she's not going by Emily in the thing, but it's Emily, I think.
Right. There's a male protagonist that we've played before and a female protagonist we haven't.
Right, and it's the female is the little girl from the first game, I think. And so I've been debating with myself, am I going to play through Dishonored as her, or am I going to play through Dishonored as Kuro? Because I love Kuro.
Right.
But, but there's this other option here that apparently makes some adjustments to the game.
Yeah.
So I still don't know the answer.
Yeah. I think it's a good question. I don't know. I want to play as Kuro so bad because I love Kuro. Like, I enjoyed the first Dishonored so much. And at the same time, like, this other character has all these different abilities, and you can play the game so much. What it does is it gives it a really good replayability value.
Yes.
Excuse me. That I'm excited about. I'm excited to hopefully fall in love with Dishonored. I wanted to say Uncharted. With Dishonored 2, so much so that I want to go back and replay it as the other character.
Right.
Whichever one I start with, I hope I do them both. So, yeah. It's a cool idea, and I'm glad they're doing it. I'm also really pumped for Battlefront 2 for the same reason, that it's a female protagonist in the Star Wars universe, and that's cool. And that's kind of in line with where the movies have gone with both the Episode 7 and with what was it, Rogue One?
Rogue One, yeah.
Both of which had female protagonists as kind of the leading role, which is cool. And so the Star Wars universe in as well is cool. And so that's an aside, but I think it's an important point to make because we're not going to see any other female leads, I don't think, in any of these Sony games.
No.
From here on out, we're all white males. So maybe not all white males, but all males for sure. Mostly white males because, you know, that's what we do in games. So anyway, after that, we here's another female protagonist right off the top. There's going to be Horizon DLC coming.
Yeah.
Which is cool. We have yet to play Horizon, and we apparently need to because it's amazing.
And
so now there's going to be more content when we get to it.
And again, I don't know what the trend is here, but again, there's quite a few people that think that's another standalone deal.
Yeah, which it very well could be. I see. I have a little harder time seeing that one as a standalone because it's the same character.
Right.
But maybe. It feels like the standalones often do a different kind of storyline, different person. But either way, having more content for a game that's apparently phenomenal is a good thing.
See, now I don't want to play it until this comes out. Like I want to play it until this comes out and then pick that up and just go right into it because I think one thing about us, depending on the game, we don't do a lot of DLC. I think this DLC, if it ends up being DLC or if we got to buy a whole other game, it's probably worth doing. It's because they were talking about it on the after show. Cool thing about this is you spend all this time leveling her up and getting the skills together and all of that, and then you add this thing in and she starts at level 60 or whatever it is because you're using the same save, which that is something I think that would keep us in it.
Sure.
Like, the thing about the Dishonored DLC, I can't believe I keep going back to it, but that's the big thing for Dishonored this year. I'm going to play it because those games are fan-freaking-tastic. I don't know why I didn't play DLC for the original game. I'm going to play DLC for Dishonored 2 because it's, you know, it's that good. I mean, it's worth playing.
Sure.
But it centers around Billy, which is another female character. And I'm it's like, okay, I'm going to play it. I'm going to enjoy it because it's Dishonored, but it's not a have-to thing.
Sure.
I hope the Horizon DLC is a have-to thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. And I'm excited about it. I think it looks really cool. After that, we got more of Days Gone, which we saw last year.
I really like this.
I do, too. I dig it. Again, it's just we saw a lot of it at E3 last year. We saw a lot of it at E3 this year. They showed us a lot of new gameplay. So last year, we saw gameplay for this game that was like hordes of zombies. This year, we're seeing gameplay that's much more tactical, which is
cool. We still got hordes.
We still have hordes, yeah. There's still mass amounts of zombies, but it's not just a running away from zombies all the time. By the way, zombie animals, including a zombie wolf that we're seeing right now on the video that's playing on Twitch, which is a little nuts. I didn't realize earlier that the wolf was a zombie, but there is a zombie bear at the end of the trailer. That's pretty fantastic.
Well, you know, you start eating dead flesh, and yeah.
What do you expect to happen? Yeah. You know? So... I think Days Gone looks really cool. A lot of people are not super excited about it because the zombie survival game market is pretty saturated. There's a lot of them out there, and so there's State of Decay, which I've seen a lot of people saying Days Gone or State of Decay are kind of the two like you've got to pick from this year. Like you're either probably excited by one or the other. For me, I'm much more interested in Days Gone, but I don't know why. It's just the one that's drawn me in more.
Thank you, Robert Kirkman, for the burnout. By the way, still reading that book, still fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. It is very much The Walking Dead has invaded video games, and there's lots of different kind of manifestations of that, of which Days Gone is one of them. As long as the story is cool and captivating, the gameplay looks like it'll be fun. Like some of the stuff that they showed in this trailer was like kind of sneaking up on this base where there's some people hanging out, and he hides a bear trap in like the bushes, and then he uses a rock to draw one of the guys over to where the bear trap is, and the you know, gets his leg snapped in the bear trap and freaks out, and the whole crew goes over, and then he can sneak by. Like, that's a fun gameplay mechanic. Like, that's a cool thing.
I love that we're talking about it, and it's coming up on the video. So if you're on Twitch, which I don't think anybody is at this point, but if you're on Twitch, we're coming up on what we're talking about here.
Right.
You need to come hang out with us for the last couple of live shows.
For sure.
If you haven't if you haven't been here, you need to come hang out
because
you're
a fun time.
The Twitch people are looking at what we're talking about right now. It's really cool.
Right. And if you're just listening on a podcast, go find video of this if you haven't. I'm assuming most people have probably seen a lot of this already, but it really does look cool. Like it looks like it's sneaking and tactical and not just run and gun, which is kind of what we saw last year. And so, yeah, Days Gone has got me excited. Again, we don't have a release date for it, and probably not this year. Almost certainly next year at some point. And very possibly we're going to see it at E3 again next year. They're going to say coming in August, which Sony's E3 next year could be really cool because we'll have so many close games.
Well, we'll be falling over
ourselves
next year.
Maybe they'll show us some new games next year, which I still think. Big deal. We need some new games. So anyway, Days Gone, I think is awesome. So I will say we did see one new game that we didn't know about, but isn't our thing. And so maybe that we just were missed on this, although a lot of people are super pumped about this. It's a new Monster Hunter game. It's called Monster Hunter World. I've never in my life played a Monster Hunter title. I know that they're a big deal. Like, a lot of people are super into them.
It's a very big thing everywhere else but here.
I feel like that's the case. Like, internationally, Monster Hunter is massive in America. Meh. And so, for, like, gamers who get into, in America, they get into a lot of international stuff. I think there's a big cult following for it here. And then, obviously, a big hardcore following for it in the rest of the world. For us, it's something we don't really get. And so it's like dude running around with this massive sword and fighting dinosaurs, which
cool. I think it's hilarious. He's running around with the big massive sword, but he never takes it out.
I know. Like, it seems like that big massive sword could help you out, man. it's just slapped
on his back. Like,
the whole
seriously,
time.
If you're going to carry that thing on your back, it's heavy.
Yeah.
You're going to whip that thing out, man.
So I don't know what else to say about Monster Hunter. There's big T-Rex that has feathers and flies and looks terrifying.
And a big freaking nose, which is
That's interesting. So if you like hunting monsters, here's your chance. For me, it didn't do anything. But I know that there's people that are super pumped about it, which is cool. So that's awesome. After that, we saw new Call of Duty, which is, this is shocking, takes place in World War II. What?
We're back! This is how it started.
So now we have Battlefield that takes place in World War One, and we have Call of Duty that takes place in World War Two, and all things old are new again. It's just this cycle of video games. It's so funny. We'll talk about another one of these things here in just a second that's old, that's having a killer E3. It really feels like one of the biggest winners from this E3 is old video games. Like, old video games are having a really good E3. Call of Duty, which is an old video game in and of itself, but it's going back to its roots. It's going back to kind of where it started. And
the scary thing for me, the reason that old games are doing so well this year, is because I don't think anybody has anything.
I know.
Like, I think they're remaking and doing what they need to do because they don't have fresh. I may be completely wrong. I mean, we're two idiots sitting in Amarillo, Texas, in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. But I
wouldn't disagree with you. I think you're onto something. I don't think we've seen a lot of really new stuff this year at E3. A few things, but even for the most part, things we knew were coming. Beyond Good and Evil being an exception to that, that was a big shock. And a few things like A Way Out that and I really dig, that's new and we didn't know anything about. But as far as like big AAA announcements, there's not a lot of them, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it feels like 2017 is going to be kind of a down year as far as video game releases, aside from one of the best video games of all time in Breath of the Wild, right?
Right.
And so we started 2017 with maybe one of the best video games ever. We're going to end 2017 with like, a lot of good games are coming next year, you know?
That's what's crazy is based on what we're seeing now, Game of the Year either goes to Breath of the Wild or Horizon, probably.
Which, did Horizon come out this year? I guess it did, didn't
it? I think
it
did,
I think it might have been late last year, but no, I think it's this year.
They're the ones. I mean, that's the list.
Yeah.
And I
believe Horizon's great. I can't imagine it beating Breath of the Wild at this point.
Yeah, but we haven't played it.
We haven't played it. Yeah, but I just can't imagine it. Not to say it's not great, but Breath of the Wild is one of the best games ever. I don't see Horizon as being one of the best games ever. A phenomenal game that's not going to be one of the best games ever.
Chad just fell over.
That's fine. He may agree with us on this point because he's now played a lot of Zelda. They seem like similar experiences in a lot of ways and different experiences in a lot of ways. But Breath of the Wild is one of my top three games ever.
Yeah.
Horizon's not going to be. You know?
Yeah.
Like, I know that already going in, and that's not something that I'm saying in a pejorative way. There's just only so many games that can be that level. And part of that is the nostalgia of Zelda and loving that franchise.
Hold up. Did you just say pejorative?
Yeah. I use big words.
That's a big word, dude. Like, seriously. That's like the second time this week you whipped that out. Like, you said it one time, like, yesterday or the day before, and I just kind of let it go. But it came in. There it is. And, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Get out the thesaurus, kid.
Words with Gaming and Sister. Thank you very much.
Good time. So, I think it's going to be great. I'm looking forward to playing it. So,
yeah.
After that, we got into a remaster of Shadow of the Colossus.
Okay. All right. So.
Again, old game.
Old
new
game,
again.
But I'm really excited about this.
It looks phenomenal.
And I hope you're really excited about this because we have all this new streaming tech, and you're playing games and streaming, and I'm watching it. Like, I have this list of stuff, okay? Like, you need to play this, you need to play this, and I'm excited because they're all on the PlayStation 4, which you can't pick up and move.
Right.
Which means you have to stream all of it. And, like, I'm looking at this going, this is unbelievable, this thing.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's a remake, yeah, it's an old game, but, dude, I'm excited.
Me too. It's worth playing again, or playing for the first time if you haven't played it. It looks so good. One of the complaints forever about the original Shadow of the Colossus was that the controls were just really hard, really janky. Not hard as the game was difficult, but hard because it was hard to play, that there were just technical limitations to it. The hope is that with where tech is now and video games are now, that they can fix a lot of that for this and make it not only a much prettier experience, which it is, the trailer is drop dead gorgeous, just amazing.
Yeah.
But also make it a better gameplay experience, that it's more fun to play. And so that's a big deal. That's a cool thing. Not new. Again, it's an old game. But that's a remaster. It's worth seeing. So we also saw Avengers versus Capcom.
Actually, Marvel versus Capcom.
So I don't know what to do
with that. That's been a thing for years, and it had this weird like trailer. I thought talking about old games, I thought they were bringing back the old school like Avengers from like the arcade.
Yeah.
I was about to get really excited. And then you had like
Chun-Li show up. Threw me off so bad, because it's like Thor and like the Hulk and Black Panther and then Chun-Li. I'm like, one of these things is not like the other, you know? Like, and then Mega Man, and like it's bizarre.
And the Fox. Well, who's the Fox? Where's the Fox from?
I don't remember.
Random Fox.
Yeah. Dante from Devil May Cry was there at the end, which was cool. Still weird. Like, just bizarre.
The Fox is like, can I have the girls, please?
Oh, what is his name? He's from Guardians of the Galaxy. Yeah, whatever his name is. Rocky Raccoon. It's not it, but that's what I'm thinking.
Somebody's going to kill us.
I know.
Because we missed that, but...
Anyway, and it's not something I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Maybe it's cool, but it's not my thing. So, and then we got into the kind of VR showcase,
This is going to be fun.
Sony is heavy behind PlayStation VR. They're the only console out there right now that's doing anything in the VR realm. Microsoft didn't even mention VR in their press conference. And really, it's Ubi that we've seen anything from VR, and a little bit in the PC game show. But Ubi with some serious titles in VR. So Sony showed off. It wasn't a big part of the press conference. It was right in the middle, and so they didn't harp on it. They didn't do any kind of live demos or even talk about it. It was just a montage of games. But they showed some games that are worth discussing. First and foremost is the fact that they're bringing Skyrim to PlayStation VR. I would make an argument that the game that's having the best E3 is Skyrim, a game that was released in 2011. Skyrim is getting huge props on the Switch and now is going to be getting huge props on PlayStation VR, which is bizarre that Skyrim is still such a big deal at E3 2017, but it is.
And it makes me wonder if, because as far as the PC is concerned, Bethesda is no longer patching Skyrim. I think if you go out and buy the whatever the new thing is, I can't remember the name of it. It may be getting patched, but as for the original Skyrim, Bethesda is no longer patching Skyrim. So I'm wondering if, because of all of this, we're going to start getting new Skyrim content from Bethesda, because I don't think they planned on all of this.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were like, yeah, we'll put it on Switch, and that's going to turn out to be a big deal. And then Sony came a call, and they're like, yeah, we'll put it in PlayStation VR. And so now I'm wondering if we're going to start seeing Skyrim content.
New content there. It's possible. I don't think it's likely, but it's possible.
Because the new Elder Scrolls ain't coming for, you know, a while.
Which is fair. They just released in the past year the remaster, whatever it's called, the Skyrim edition. That I think if you own Skyrim, you get for free. I mean, I have it for free on my computer. So,
do you?
Yeah. Like, it just was like, it's available, download it. And so I have it.
I gotta figure that out because I don't have it.
I haven't played with it much because, honestly, my original Skyrim mod, it still looks a lot better than the new Skyrim.
I'm still playing the original Skyrim.
I know. I fire it up once in a while, too. It's such a good and obviously lasting game that is still making waves at E3 2017.
6 years later. Whoops.
Oh, that's fun.
I spilled some water. So
what did we spill on?
Nothing except your desk.
That's all right. Here, so.
I'm going to mop up some water while we sit here and talk more about Skyrim.
I knew that was going to happen at some point. I'm just glad it didn't land on the laptops or something.
Right. It's definitely out of the way from all the important stuff.
We would be freaking out a little bit if that happened. But back to Skyrim. I really feel like you're right. It's having a good E3. And that's a testament to, we talked about the Bethesda conference and all the stuff they had going on. And we were really pumped about everything we saw from them. It's a testament to the games that they make. Because the reason people are still playing Skyrim, the reason it's popping up on these new consoles in new ways, is because it's really that good.
Yeah. It's a game that has a lasting legacy, and it should. But it's still bizarre that, one of the biggest games we're anticipating on a new console is a game from 2011. One of the biggest games we're anticipating in this new VR frontier is a game from 2011.
Okay, so let's talk about VR. Because you and I have an HTC Vive sitting right there, which, with the help of some software, you can finagle it to run Skyrim in VR.
Which I've done, by the way.
You have done. I have not, because I don't feel like I would get... It's a lot of work, and I don't feel like I would get a lot out of it. And we talked about this before. We love VR. We love VR. We're ecstatic to have the Vive. Thank you, Duff, again, for doing what you did. But here's my thing. 30 minutes to an hour with the Vive on my face, and I got to take a break. I got to go do something else. I got to rest. You know, it's hard on my eyes. The interesting thing about Skyrim in VR on the PlayStation 4 is that you have told me repeatedly, and I've seen online, that the PS4 PSVR visor is extraordinarily comfortable as compared to the other ones.
Sure.
So if you put that thing on your face and it's comfortable and it's Skyrim in VR and it works, that is the definitive place to play Skyrim in VR.
Oh, absolutely.
I think.
Yeah,
do you agree?
At 100%. I have zero doubt about it. The way that you finagle Skyrim to work on the PC using it in VR sucks.
Yeah.
Let me not mince words about it. It just sucks. It's not a good experience because Skyrim is not designed to be played in VR. And so things like the HUD are really, really difficult to deal with, which is an important part of Skyrim. Like, you've got to have access to menus. You've got to be able to see your map, all these kinds of things that just don't work well with how it's designed originally in VR. It's not a great experience. It was fun to play with it and to be in Skyrim in VR. Like, I enjoyed it for the 15 minutes I played with it, but it took me 3 hours to get it set up. For those 15 minutes, I went, "Ooh, this is cool." And then I was like, "But screw it, I'm just going to go play Skyrim normally."
Right.
Because it wasn't designed for that experience. This is designed for that experience. Now, I have tons of questions about it because it didn't show off gameplay, and that's something I would have liked to have seen gameplay for, because how do you navigate in that world? In the trailer we saw, the guy's walking around. But are you playing with a controller? Are you using... Because it talks about the motion control aspect of it, that you can use a bow and arrow, which is supposedly really cool in it. But you either have to use a DualShock or you use the move controllers. You can't really do both. PlayStation controller, you can walk. If you're using the Move controllers, you can't really walk. But if you're using the PlayStation controller, you can't do the motion controls.
Right.
So I have a lot of questions about just how it works.
Well, and that's the other thing. I think for us, I don't think you're going to have a problem just using a PlayStation controller. I think it'd probably be more comfortable to just use the PlayStation controller and be in that environment and be looking around. And I think that might be the best way to play.
Maybe. But the one thing I have found that I love doing in VR and the Vive is bow and arrow based games.
Yeah.
I love archery games on the Vive. And think about bow and arrow game that Skyrim that's shooting a dragon.
Boy, and I'll tell you, one thing Skyrim does really well, and I notice every time I pick up a bow, is bow and arrow. It levels up quickly. You get good skills out of it. They do it really well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
absolutely. And so that part would be fun, but that part would be fun with the motion controls. With a standard controller, it's just the same thing it's always been. Same thing with like magic and being able to cast spells and assigning different spells to each of your hands and that kind of stuff. Like, I would want to play Skyrim as a very different character than I usually play those kind of games. I usually play as like the stealth backstab kind of character. I would want to play this one either as like a mage character or a ranger character so that I'm predominantly using either a bow or magic or maybe both, kind of blend those things together.
Right.
But a distant character that can do that kind of stuff, because that would be fun with the motion controls. That seems to be the way to go. I just don't know how well it's going to work. I have a lot of questions about it, but I'm pumped. I think it's cool, and I think that's a smart thing for Sony to not... I think they struck a good balance, which is probably going to piss off most people because they're either going to think they spent too much time on PlayStation VR or not enough time on PlayStation VR. But I think them putting it in the middle and showing a few compelling titles that are interesting but not taking over the event is probably where PlayStation VR needs to be right now. It's still a niche thing. It is not a mass market gaming thing. It is growing. It's still early tech. We think it's going to continue to be a thing. But even we were watching the pre-show from GameSpot, I think it was, that they were like, I hope they don't spend any time on VR. We're just not that into VR.
Yeah, that one dude was like, I don't care.
Makes us feel better about being curmudgeons when there's other curmudgeons in the world. Yeah. And so, but it's just, you know, that's the way that VR kind of polarizes people. Some people are super pumped about it. Some people don't really care about it. And I get that. It's not going to be for everybody, but I think that it has a place in gaming, and I think Sony kind of treated it right where it needs to be.
I will say this. Because of God of War, because of Shadow of the Colossus, because of the VR stuff, I said to you, and I'm kind of glad it's not going to be till 2018, but I said to you sitting here, we have to have a PlayStation Pro. We have to have a PlayStation Pro, and we have to have PSVR. There's no question.
I agree with the PlayStation VR. I still don't know the PlayStation Pro. I need to see the benefit, especially of VR and the PlayStation Pro. These little graphic upgrades, can I be honest? And maybe this makes me sound like a terrible gamer. They don't excite me that much. Well, they just honestly, this is
right.
Like a slight power upgrade is different than like a console generation upgrade, you know?
I agree, but we know where it's going to come in handy is VR.
Sure.
The
I just need to see that evidence of
right.
it. I don't have I put more skepticism in the headset hardware than I do in the power of the PlayStation 4 Pro. In that, I don't know that the hardware can do a whole lot more. The actual headset could do a whole lot more.
Right.
Because it's it's a step down from the Oculus and Vive.
Even with more muscle.
Right.
Okay.
It'll do marginally more. I'm not saying it's not going to make any difference. I just don't know that it makes enough of a difference to justify it.
Right.
Maybe it does. I could be wrong about that. But that's what I need to see with the PlayStation 4 Pro. I agree on the PlayStation VR 100%. I think that's another place. I think PC VR is really cool with either Vive or Oculus, whichever way you go on that. But it's really still lacking software. There's some cool stuff out there, but it still feels like a lot of stuff is in the development stage. It feels like Sony is putting more software muscle behind their VR. I would rather have, as a gamer experience, the lower quality hardware with better software as part of it.
If the had not taken care of us and
right.
gotten the Vive, what we would have done was bought PlayStation VR, and I think we would have been really, really, really happy with it.
Oh, sure.
Because like you said, they're making a serious push.
Yeah. They've established that PlayStation is the place to go if you want console VR. I mean, neither of the other ones are even doing it or making a concerted effort at this point. But I would even go a step farther, and I think they're making a push that they're the place to go for VR, period. As much as we love the Vive, and it's great, and there's really fun, interesting software right now.
And there's a ton that we haven't played yet.
Right.
I mean,
it's just there's not the focus on the PC for a platform like VR that there is going to be from a singular company that's developing for it. And so Sony is able to focus on that and say, here's IPs we have that are existing or we can get together with. I'm interested to see if this Skyrim VR that's coming to the PlayStation will also come to PCs, will also be Oculus and Vive compatible.
Man, if that happened,
it would be super cool.
Hello.
They haven't said anything about it yet that I know of. And so right now it looks like it's just a PlayStation VR exclusive. If that's true, that's a compelling reason to go to Sony for your VR experience.
Yeah.
So I think it's smart on them. Again, I don't think it's going to be a huge market share, but I think it's significant enough to keep people interested. And they showed enough. So they showed, they've got some other VR games we haven't even got to yet. They showed Skyrim, of course. They showed a game called Starchild that's like a Metroidvania 2D side-scroller looking thing, but that's VR. So I don't entirely know how that's going to play. I obviously, we've talked about this a ton, I'm a huge fan of the Metroidvania genre. Like, I just love it. I'll eat up almost any of those games that come out. Last year we had Headlander from Double Fine was that big one, the Metroidvania from E3, and I played it and I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed that game. It's not the best Metroidvania game I've ever played, but it was really good. And there's a whole bunch of those. We talked a lot about Shadow Complex, which is a great example of the franchise or the genre. This is another one of those, but now it's in VR, and so I guess you're like looking into the world, but it's one that looks like it plays with a controller that you're controlling it, but can look around and maybe other VR things. I don't know that it's going to be compelling enough to justify playing it in VR, which comes with headaches, literally headaches sometimes, but also headaches as far as just like you have to put this visor on, you're disconnected from the world around you, you can't multitask, which for me is a big thing.
That's a huge thing for you. I don't know that it matters so much.
I don't know either. Right. But it is for me, and it would be a reason that if this is a good Metroidvania game, that I might just rather have it in a standard format as opposed to VR. But it also could be, holy cow, this is a really fun way to approach this genre, and now I want a lot more of those in VR.
Right.
Who knows? But it could be really, really cool. So, we also saw Final Fantasy 15 Fishing in VR.
Yeah, that was weird.
Woo. Yeah.
That was not weird.
I don't need that.
Like, I'm really hoping you brought it with you. I don't know if we're going to have time to play. You brought it with you. And I haven't had time to really dive into what you put on YouTube so far. I'm really hoping that we get kind of started with Final Fantasy 15 because we really haven't started in earnest.
Right.
I mean, you played a little bit, but we haven't really said, okay, here we go.
Yeah, we're nowhere in the game yet.
Right, and so I'm really hoping that we put some time into it, and it's really good, and we like it, and we're like, woo, Final Fantasy! But we're not there yet. And so they showed this, and I'm like, what?
Yeah.
What? Like, what? The boy band is fishing? What?
Yeah. We also saw a game called Inpatient, which is from the creators of Until Dawn. That's in VR. That's
right.
Trippy psychological
thing.
This
thing, kind of want to see.
Yeah, it was really pretty. If it looks that good in VR, I want to see it just because aesthetically it looked really good.
Yeah.
And that's a big deal in VR is just having fun visual experiences that captivate you, that suck you in. That's an important part of VR, and this looks like it could have that. So we also saw a shooter called Bravo Team, which is another VR shooter. May be fun, may not be all that much fun. We'll see, but could be cool. And then there was one other one, I don't remember the name of it, that was a platformer type looking, maybe even a Zelda-esque looking thing.
The reason he didn't remember the name of it was they were going so fast.
Yeah.
He was trying to keep up.
It was nuts.
And he does not have it in front of him now.
Yeah. So there was another game that was called something, and at some point we'll remember it, and it may be cool in VR, and it may not be fun at all in VR, so who knows. But again, they made a big push in a very quick amount of time for again, being the place for VR, which I think is smart of them. I think it's a good idea without devoting themselves 100% to that and nothing else.
So interesting thought, because I was going somewhere before you shot me down on the PlayStation Pro. But we saw the Microsoft conference. We saw what they did with the Xbox One X. And I don't think I will ever buy an Xbox One X. I'll buy an Xbox One for media purposes at some point when it's down to like $150. But I don't think I'll ever buy an Xbox One X. And they're not doing VR. They're not doing anything compatible. Like, they should be doing AR. Where's HoloLens, for crying out loud? But they're not doing anything compelling to make me buy into what they got. Sony, on the other hand, we got the VR stuff. We got all these good-looking games. Yeah, they're not coming out to 2018. But I'm like, okay, I probably need a PlayStation VR for SharePlay more than anything else for me. I hope it works on SharePlay, because, hello, it's right. Like the greatest thing ever. And I'm probably going to need a PlayStation Pro at some point. I can't say that about Microsoft. So as far as I'm concerned, Sony has a leg up, and they have for a few years, but I'm going to be more apt to drop the money on their hardware than I will with Microsoft. I mean, we talked about it during the Microsoft show. That was really disappointing. Sony's giving me some reasons to, like, hey, we got this thing. You need to, like, check it out.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm going to pick it up, but...
Yeah. I would agree insofar as the PlayStation Pro is a little bit more compelling to me generally, and especially on price point, even though it's not nearly as powerful. But I didn't see anything from either of those conferences to compel me to go out and buy their upgraded hardware. Sony didn't even talk about it. Like, they showed little montages with the PlayStation Pro in it, but they didn't say, hey, and this is how much better it looks on the PlayStation Pro anywhere in their press conference. Neither one of them sold me on this new expensive hardware that they have. And I don't know, like, I wanted Microsoft too. I didn't necessarily want Sony too. I already have a PlayStation 4 and I'm happy with it. I don't want to buy a new one if I don't have to. I'm cheap. And so if I could get away with just keeping the same one, I'm going to keep the same one. Neither one of them came out with a good argument on why more powerful hardware is necessary.
I want to bring up a very interesting point that the GameSpot people brought up. Or maybe it was IGN. I don't remember. We switched at one point. But they brought up the fact that we didn't see The Last of Us 2, and it didn't bother them because we saw it at PS Expo earlier in the year. That's where we got the trailer with the guitar and all of that.
Right.
So what they said was, what if they are trying to make PlayStation Expo a bigger deal, because PlayStation Expo is about them. So what if that's where they start talking about the really, really, really big titles and start talking about the hardware and all of that jazz? Like, we've never covered PlayStation Expo. It's a new thing. Like, that's kind of what they said. And I thought that's why they weren't really that upset that The Last of Us didn't show up, because we know it's out. We know it's coming. We know they're working on it. We know there'll be more. And one of the guys over there actually said, probably going to show up at PlayStation Expo this year. And that's a very interesting angle. Because they've got PlayStation Expo, and we've got all these different shows now. We've got Gamescom, we've got PAX, we've got...
Right. Dumb, though, because they don't have the exposure.
Well,
you build way... Even if you're competing with everybody else at E3, you're Sony, for crying out loud, you're going to get the exposure.
Right.
You show The Last of Us 2, it's going to blow up huge here. If you show it at PlayStation Expo, it's going to be a big story, obviously. But it's not going to get the exposure, which strategically, that may be what they're thinking, and I get that for sure. But until E3 isn't the place that you do this stuff, I expect them to do this stuff at E3.
Right.
Maybe we're seeing this year that E3 is becoming the place where you don't do this stuff, and we're seeing maybe the minimizing of E3 as a platform for some of these big announcements and everything else, which would be fine. It would be a bummer for us just because we love E3 so much and it's fun to cover E3.
Right.
They may take away our reason to want to do this every year by spreading stuff out throughout the year. It just either show up big or pull a Nintendo. You know, like, I feel like they landed somewhere in the middle where they showed up. And I'm not trying to minimize what they showed because they did show good stuff. But when you have a game that we know exists and we know is a big deal and you don't even talk about it in the press conference at all, it feels a little bit weird. Like, it feels like a missed opportunity to me. And maybe The Last of Us is still 2 years out, and so they don't want to be talking about it forever. That would be a hard argument to make with as many of the games that they're showing again this year at E3 that are 2 years out from last year. But that may be some of their thinking as well. I don't know. That would have brought the house down. The most awkward point for me of the whole Sony press conference was the very end when they brought the lights up in the theater and everybody was just kind of like,
is it that over? All?
And there was like this weird smattering of applause and then people right. start moving around. They're like, really? Nothing? Like, it just didn't land, you know? Like, it didn't make an impact the way that Sony has the past couple of years and the way that a lot of other press conferences, and for the most part, again, I'll say this, across the board this at E3 this year, just doesn't feel like anything other than the Beyond Good and Evil 2 reveal has really made an impact. Everything else has just been kind of, okay. And maybe it's because we're in the middle of a console cycle, too.
And granted, we said before Bethesda was great.
Right, we love Bethesda, but a lot of people didn't.
Right.
Because they also didn't show anything new, so it's a fair complaint. Not nothing, they showed a couple of new things, I'll take that back, but they showed a lot of stuff that we already knew, but that's coming soon. Like, that's the big difference, is everything they showed is coming this year.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I guess my point being, if this, like, E3 actually starts, like, right now.
Right.
Like,
in earnest.
Right now, in earnest. People on the floor, that type of stuff. What I'm going to be interested in from Sony is what's at the Sony booth.
Sure.
What are people playing? Because we didn't hear, hey, we're going to have this demo and that demo. Yeah. And it was like,
And you know why we didn't hear a lot of that? Because a lot of these games are a long ways away.
Yeah.
You know, which is a bummer. I'm hoping that there'll be more of them there than we're anticipating. But that's kind of what it feels like right now. So, two more games we got to talk about that showed up in the Sony press conference. One that we were looking forward to, we're excited, was here. Or three more, I guess. Because we have God of War that we knew was coming. We saw last year. We saw again this year. They played a really long trailer again this year. Last year was what they started their show with, and it was this mostly gameplay approach. This year it was a lot of cinematics and some gameplay. But it's still Kratos as dad and an awkward little, like, kind of emo son. Like, I don't entirely get everything that's going on story-wise, but it's all about the feels, the emotion, and like, whatever about it. It's so weirdly not God of War feeling while still being God of War feeling, while still being like hack and slash and awesome.
It's all about the feels.
I keep seeing people refer to it as Dad of War, and I love that. Like, it's like ushering his son around, and you can see, like, he feels this responsibility to, like, take care of this kid, but he also is super resentful of having to take care of this kid. And he's like, why can't you just be like me, you dumb kid? You know? It's just
like, he's like, crap, I can't suck.
Yeah.
I can't suck.
Yeah.
I got this kid. I got to do the right thing.
Yeah. I will say, though, as an admirer of facial hair and somebody who takes a pride in my own facial hair, I love the Kratos beard. I just dig the Kratos beard. It's great. It's my favorite part of Dad Kratos.
The interesting thing about this, and I say I probably wouldn't have thought about it, except that we're watching it. It's up on the screen. Did you notice, and it may be an E3 thing that they did, But there is no HUD.
Yeah. They mentioned that in one of the IGN coverage or somebody. And I imagine it probably is an E3 thing. Surely there's going to be some level of HUD. It may be fairly minimal. But yeah, there's nothing right now of what we're seeing. I think that's probably just intentional showcase decision.
I kind of like it.
It is cool. It makes it more cinematic for sure, even in the gameplay elements. I don't know the practicality of it. But I mean, God of War, you don't need much. You just need to know when you're about to die. Yeah. Like, what other indicator do you need? honestly.
You need a rage meter.
But you could do that somewhere fairly easily. That's not going to be intrusive. So I do like that idea of a very minimal HUD. By the way, this is a jaw-dropping game. Visually,
yes.
Sony brought some jaw-dropping games. Days Gone looks really, really good. I don't know if I'd say jaw-dropping. God of War is jaw-dropping. I think Detroit is jaw-dropping. And I think Spider-Man is. Those three titles are phenomenal-looking games.
We were talking about PlayStation Pro and do we need it or not. I wonder, I assume this is running on the Pro.
You would assume.
I wonder, if I put this in my PlayStation 4 and it doesn't look like that, and then we get it next to a PlayStation Pro and you put it in and it's that might make me go out and buy one.
Yeah.
And buy.
Definitely, but it won't be. It's going to be minimal upgrades, visual upgrades. It's going to look, it looks phenomenal right now, and we're watching it on a 720 YouTube stream, Already the output of your PlayStation is going to look better than this, maybe the rendering differently, but just the resolution of it is going to look better on the PlayStation. I hear what you're saying, for sure, but I don't have a TV to support 4K, even though the PlayStation Pro, you can argue about its 4K-ness, but it's somewhat 4K. Pseudo 4K.
Why do you have one? They're only $400.
Right. there's other upgrades to that, and I still don't know. Again, if we saw it side by side and it's a massive difference, I would buy in. I just can't imagine it being a massive difference.
That's ridiculous.
That is ridiculous. And my PlayStation 4 can do that, I'm confident of. My PlayStation 4 that I have right now that did Uncharted 4 can do that. Because Uncharted 4 was also ridiculous.
Which, shame on us, I have not seen Uncharted 4 yet.
Right.
I've seen a little bit, but not enough.
Yeah.
So, you may be right. In which case, that's good for us as gamers.
Absolutely.
Not real good for Sony.
Right. that is very, very true, so... God of War looks great, and that's a good point. Our boy Logan's hanging out with us in Twitch. He makes a good point that what Microsoft lacked is what Sony has, which is really good exclusives. That's a big deal, and that's something that even though Microsoft led off every single one of their trailers or gameplay things,
world premiere
with their exclusive tag, they had them all called exclusive. Some of them were timed exclusive, some of them were other things. But even the ones that are true exclusives, none of them got me excited the way that God of War got me excited.
Nah, they weren't that good.
And then we also have Detroit, and then we also have Spider-Man, which are exclusive as well, right? Spider-Man's exclusive to the PlayStation.
I would think so.
Yeah. And so let's talk about those two. Detroit Become Human, which is the David Cage game that we saw last year. It's about androids that become human. play as an android is my understanding of the game, or maybe multiple different androids in a David Cage game. You never know. In their quest to no longer be machines, but to be people. And that's a cool concept. And this world looks awesome. It's Quantic Dream, and so the pretty scale is kind of off the charts. The character models are ridiculous. A little Uncanny Valley-ish,
but
ridiculous.
They're androids.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
You can kind of justify it, I guess. That's a really good point. I like that.
The thing that got me was the main character, Marcus, is voiced by a Grey's Anatomy actor, a main character on Grey's Anatomy. And you look at his face, it's that guy because they motion captured him. I'm like, holy cow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I still watch that show. but yeah, that's how good it is. I'm like, I know that guy.
Yeah. It's awfully pretty, and like we've said, we love Quantic Dream games. I've enjoyed every one of them. From we played Indigo Prophecy that we enjoyed thoroughly. Right. We played Heavy Rain, which we enjoyed thoroughly. Even Beyond, which was weird, was still a really
cool.
fun experience.
Yeah.
This looks like a lot of the same. The one thing I was really disappointed about is that they didn't show much in the terms of gameplay. We know kind of how previous Quantic Dream games have played. They've all been similar with some walking around, some observation, and then quick time events. Kind of similar to how Telltale games play without the point and click part of it.
Right.
You walk more, but you do that in Telltale as well. I'm assuming that this one's probably going to play in a similar vein. One, the gameplay mechanics that you did get a sense of.
See, I think that right there, I think that's live.
Right. They have this gameplay mechanic where they're showing you that, like, you can choose, like, all these different options of how the story unfolds so you can approach things either aggressively or a lot more passively or whatever. But it's still not showing you, like, what you do with a controller in your hand. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's nothing from this that showed us how you play this game. Which for Quantic Dream is an important question because they're kind of weird games. And so I want to see a gameplay demo. I doubt we're going to see a stage demo of this, but I would be thrilled if we did.
I'm thinking we might.
I feel like we may see this trailer and David Cage or somebody else from Quantic Dream talking about it. I don't know if we're going to see somebody with a controller in their hand. I hope we do. I really do, because I want to see how this game plays. And so I hope you're right and that is a thing.
So I didn't mean to be really smart there, but they are androids.
Yeah.
And so when you said Uncanny Valley, I'm like, yeah, androids.
Yeah. To be fair, the people in the game also are Uncanny Valley. So it's not exclusive to the androids, but it does make the androids' Uncanny Valley-ness, their eyes and their mouth movements and that kind of stuff, a little easier to deal with. The guy we're looking at on the screen, that's the newscaster, was an android, and he's still Uncanny Valley-ish. But that's what Quantic Dream has always kind of been, right on the edge of that, right? Of the edge of making you uncomfortable with the visuals of how realistic they are.
And so, they probably do it on purpose.
I'm sure they do. I think they're plenty aware of that. In fact, the first time we ever said the words Uncanny Valley was talking about the Heavy Rain tech demo before
we
it was ever
ran. Tech demo up every year. I was like trying not to, but
that's where the term Uncanny Valley, as far as us talking about it in context of gaming, came from, is the weirdness of that tech demo, how it kind of made you uncomfortable, not only because of the kind of narrative of that tech demo, but because of the close realisticness of it that obviously wasn't real, which is the problem with the Uncanny Valley.
And I'm glad that you brought that up. Because Heavy Rain made us uncomfortable. That demo made us uncomfortable. I wasn't so uncomfortable with Indigo Prophecy. I hope this makes me uncomfortable, because that's a David Cage kind of thing.
But two different things I think we're talking about.
Right.
Uncanny Valley, I don't want to be uncomfortable in that way.
No.
Psychological mess with your head.
Right.
That's fun.
Yeah.
And Heavy Rain, I would agree, did that really well. Beyond, not as much. Indigo Prophecy, probably not as much, though, more than Beyond did, I think. But Heavy Rain, man, when you got to chop your finger off.
Yeah.
Woo! That's about the hardest one. I still, like, have nightmares about that. Like, that's the hardest moment in a video game I think I've ever played. The camera's all shaking, and you have to, like, pick which thing you're going to use. Like, there's, like,
freezing.
Rusty shears and a big, like, butcher knife and, like, snips. And you got to pick what you're going to use to cut off your finger. Oh, man, it was brilliant. It was incredible, interesting gameplay. I hope that Detroit brings that, too. It looks like it has a potential, too. I'm fascinated by it. I'm pumped about it, and so... Great exclusive, great for us. And again, I understand how a lot of people aren't into it. This is our niche where we talk about how we're not into Monster Hunter.
Yeah.
Way more people are going to be into Monster Hunter than are going to be into Detroit Become Human, probably. We're the guys that are into Detroit Become Human.
So right.
It hit us. Last game that they showed off was the Spider-Man game that that they're putting out that's ridiculously good looking.
It is like... This is the first game that I've seen in a while that when it goes from, like, this right here is cutscene, right?
Right.
We're watching this right here is cutscene. But when it switches to live, There's a preacher we, like right here, it's live.
Right.
There's a preacher we know different.
Right, which is one of the things I love about most games at this point is that they all do their cutscenes in engine and not pre-rendered. Not right. All games. A lot of games do that. And one of the things that Yubi is kind of notorious for doing so much rendered stuff, which we saw yesterday at their conference, including Beyond Good and Evil 2, that we saw nothing that's gameplay in that. What's great about things that are rendered in engine or that are done, cutscenes are done in engine like this, is it doesn't take you out of that immersion. I remember playing Final Fantasy VII and how awesome the cutscenes looked and how terrible the game itself looked, right?
Right.
Like, we've always been trying to bridge that gap between what cutscenes look like and what gameplay looks
and
like.
And we're getting there with this.
I would argue we're there. Like, I think at this point, like, Final Fantasy VII or Final Fantasy XV still does this, where they do pre-rendered cutscenes that look better than the gameplay does. And I wish they wouldn't. I wish that the cutscenes just looked like the gameplay, because I'd rather it all look uniform and not take me out of that immersion, even if the cutscenes don't look as good, because I think it's such a powerful thing to stay immersed in that world.
If you haven't seen Spider-Man yet, go see it, because it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's smooth. It's very reminiscent of the Arkham games for Batman. Like, it looks like it plays similarly. He uses webs to kind of be up in the rafters instead of Batman using a grappling hook to be up in the rafters. But very similar, kind of stake out what you're doing, and then you can kind of fly into combat, do the hand-to-hand combat thing like Arkham does, get out of combat when you need to regroup, and yeah. Which isn't a bad thing, because the Arkham games are super fun.
Yes.
I really enjoy how those games play. This looks like it plays like that. The big question about this game right now that hasn't been clarified is whether or not it's actually an open-world game. Because it looks like an open-world game because you're so much outside in the
city.
There's
a mini-map.
Yeah.
I mean,
It very much feels like that. And Arkham, of course, had that open-world quality to it. But nothing that we've seen so far is exploration-based. Everything has been kind of linear. Go here, fight these guys. Go here, fight these guys. And then the big kind of action sequence at the end of this thing where you're swinging through the city chasing a helicopter is awesome. But again, it's a not on rails, but it's on a track experience. Like, there's only one way you go in this. At least that's what it looks like. That there's not, like, you can't go a different way and get the same thing done. Like, you've got to follow their pre-assigned track to get there. Not necessarily a bad thing, because when the IGN post-show was talking about it, or the GameSpot post-show was talking about it, they were talking about how it kind of feels Uncharted in that way, and Uncharted does that well. Uncharted is an open world. It gives you a feel of a bigger environment than it actually is, and that's fine. Like, I'm perfectly okay with that.
One thing they said that I thought was interesting is that this might be a hybrid, that it might be open world, but then you would have 7 or 8 set pieces like this.
Yeah.
Like, you go out in the open world for side quests and for little stuff that fills in the story, and for the majority of your play, and then when you're back on the main quest, quote unquote, you've got 7 or 8 of these set pieces that are really well put together, like Uncharted.
Yeah, which I think would be a really cool kind of hybrid way to approach this. Whereas a completely open world game, you can get so lost in and
I played the last Spider-Man open world game.
Yeah.
It was really good.
And that's part of our assumption, too, is that the previous Spider-Man games have been open world, so why wouldn't this be? And because Spider-Man is about exploration in a way that, like, you have these webs that you can, you know, swing around through the city. That's always in the comic, in the movies, and everything. Like, part of the appeal of Spider-Man is that he can just zip through a city swinging from building to building. If you don't have the ability to do that in the game, it would feel a little bit like a letdown. So I'm sure there's going to be some of that. We saw some of that on the kind of scripted events that we saw here. By the way, lots of QuickTime events too, which is Uncharted-ish.
Yeah, I'm gonna have some issues.
But Uncharted does a lot of those QuickTime events in a very similar way.
But I will give them credit, because they do something that Batman with the Telltale series needs to learn. All of these QuickTime events that I'm seeing here are one button.
Yeah.
I can do that. If if I die a couple times and know the button's coming, like, I can be prepared for that. Where I struggle is, like, sometimes in Batman, it's, like, three buttons, and I'm like, okay, gotta get the fingers right, you know?
Yeah.
So if they keep it simple, I can probably handle it. It's like when it's A, B, X, and you like all four face buttons at once. I'm going to struggle.
Yeah. Which is fair. That's totally fair. So Spider-Man looks good. That's kind of the end of the story. It's going to be fun. It's going to be only on PlayStation, which is another compelling reason to buy a PlayStation if you don't have a PlayStation.
Well,
they did show off great exclusives.
The other thing about this I thought was kind of cool, because they had the comic editor come in. Hey, what did you think of this?
Right.
And he had all kinds of knowledge. And by the time he got through, I was like, man, I need to start reading Spider-Man again. Because I haven't read Spider-Man in quite a while.
Yeah.
Apparently, there's lots of stuff from the book.
Yeah.
In this. So.
One of the things that got a lot of the geeky people about Spider-Man stuff excited was at the very end of it, they show a very quick cameo of Miles Morales, who's a Spider-Man universe character that's like a Spider-Man. I don't know how to explain it. I don't know Spider-Man.
He has another
that
suit.
Well. Right. He got bit by a spider and is kind of some of the same powers, except different in that it's somewhat like Venom's powers.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But he's a big deal. And so the fact that they're teasing this guy being a part of this Spider-Man game, this new approach to the Spider-Man universe is cool. And it's fun that Kingpin's a part of it. I like that. Who we haven't really seen in the Spider-Man movies as Kingpin in the recent Spider-Man movies.
No.
He's not been a part of that. Obviously, he's a big part of Daredevil.
He's a huge part of Daredevil.
On the Netflix show, which is great. Yeah. But a good Marvel Universe villain that I love. I've always been into Kingpin. And so that's cool. It'll be interesting to see if we see any other crossover characters. The main villain that they showed in this trailer is, what was his name?
Mr. Negative,
who I don't know, I've never heard of before,
and that's what I said. I need to start reading.
Yeah,
because
this apparently
I didn't
goes
know
deep.
Mr. Negative,
and it's like he's a cool looking dude, like this electrified crazy dude, and it looks really compelling. I'm hoping we might see some other cameos too of some of these Marvel characters in this game. That could be really fun, seeing Daredevil or Punisher or whatever in conjunction in some little side quest or something that might be fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
Overall, Spider-Man looks really good.
Yeah.
It's going to be a really fun game.
And you know, I love Marvel, but I have one thing to say. I love Marvel. I love Spider-Man. I'm excited about the Homecoming, except Homecoming to me is a little weird.
I love the new kid that's playing Spider-Man.
Yeah, well, I don't know yet. He's better than Tobey Maguire. But
I dug him in the newest is Captain America, right? Whatever the newest Avengers movie was, whoever's name was on the newest Avengers movie. I dug him in that. I think he can carry a whole movie.
I hope so. I'm looking forward to going to see it. My point was, I love Spider-Man. I love Marvel. That's my thing. I mean, we got posters back around here.
There's Spider-Man up there somewhere.
But my thing is, if you're Sony, I don't know if you close the show with Spider-Man.
Right.
Like, I kind of feel the way that you feel about some of the other titles that they didn't show.
Yeah.
Like, I'm all about Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man. Big comic guy. But you're going to close the show with that?
Yeah. If I would have had to, like, put money down that meant something to me on one assumption I had about E3, it would have been Sony closes their show with The Last of Us 2. That I would have thought was the biggest lock of E3 this year. And it didn't do it. And I'm still really surprised by that. It just shocks me that they didn't show off The Last of Us 2 there. And knowing that that theater would have went nuts, right? Which just never really happened in the context of that conference. I agree that as good of a Spider-Man game that it looks like it is, it's a Spider-Man game.
Right.
Which, like, we love the Arkham games, but wouldn't want the Arkham games finishing off press conference either, you know?
No.
And so
no. Even Arkham is, like, in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Open or close.
This is
Arkham.
A really good-looking exclusive title, but it's not, like, massive Sony franchise blow-you-away title. Like, again, it's weird to try to delineate those lines. But
yeah.
There's something there that it just didn't have that thing. By the way, one other game we have to mention we didn't see is the Final Fantasy VII remake.
Right.
Didn't make an appearance at all.
Which they were making jokes on IGN after the show. But that's probably not showing up till like 2020.
Yeah.
So
that might be optimistic.
Yeah.
That thing's so far away, which is a bummer. But it's so far away, and I'm scared it's going to be bad. You know, like that's the thing. Is there
bad
gonna make
or
us...
vaporware?
Right, bad because I think it'll get here. I think. I hope. We'll see. It's gonna be The Last Guardian, where it just is here for a long time, just kind of like the shadow over everything that happens, and then they finally show it, and then they finally put it out, and people are like, it's okay. Which I feel like was the reception for The Last Guardian. It was okay.
Well, okay. But here's my thing. What?
I love the sigh. That's my favorite.
They have one of the greatest games ever to pull from. And probably 80 to 85% of the content is going to come from that title. So how could they possibly screw it up?
I hope you're right.
Here's
how they screw it up for me. Make it a battle system that looks like a recent Final Fantasy game.
Well, see, that's the thing. I feel like you got to keep the menu-based battle system. Because that's Final Fantasy VII.
I feel that way too, because personally we played that game and we loved it. But from Sony's perspective, why? Like, what from Sony recently tells you that they think that they'll have to keep that component of it? I think that's the first thing to go, because I feel like they're going to want to modernize it for whatever reason that they think these recent Final Fantasy game battle systems are better, which to
they're
me...
They're not.
Yeah,
no.
I don't,
I'm looking at Final Fantasy 15 going, that's really bad.
It's not great. It's not... I mean, it's a little bit tactical, but turn-based battle systems are... fun. For us, they're fun because we grew up with them. Maybe for younger generation,
well,
they're not as
here's,
fun.
Here's why I like it and why I will play when Final Fantasy VII Remake comes out and it ends up on the PC, because it will. This is the one Sony title that will. The rest of them have. If they stick with the turn base, I will eat it up. Because it's the one game on my PC that I don't have to twitch.
Yeah.
It's all, the menus are there. I can do what I need to do. And it's not about the speed with which I do something.
Yeah.
Or having to move the mouse in a certain way. Or I feel like, and I know you're right, because we're in this millennial thing.
Right.
It's got to be quick and it's got to be cool.
Yeah.
And, no.
Yeah.
Turn-based battle system.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you. I love the turn-based. Yeah.
Frauds.
Oh, yeah. I feel like you can't get rid of that, too, and they'll probably will. You know, like all these kind of canon things.
Like, for crying out loud, the frauds in Final Fantasy 15 are ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
Yeah. It's weird. Maybe it gets better. I doubt it. Those things that we love about the gameplay, I hope they preserve. But I think the story, I think you're right, is going to be there, because how much can you change the story?
Right.
But the story is important insofar as it supports a fun gameplay mechanic. If you have a good gameplay mechanic, you don't have a great story, not that good of a game. If you have a great story with a crappy gameplay mechanic, also not that good of a game. Like, you've got to have a gameplay mechanic that's fun to play. That's where I see them screwing it up at. Hopefully they don't. Hopefully, and I think this would be the best idea, and they've done this with some of the Final Fantasy games, is that they kind of give you the option between turn-based and more action-based battle systems. But if you do that, you've got to make the turn-based system good, because that's the problem with a lot of them, is that you can do it turn-based, quote-unquote, but it's not really, like, a deep turn-based system.
I think that's why I've always loved Fallout, because I have the option to, okay, if I want to go turn-based, which is basically what VATS is, I can and I do most of the time, because Fallout is, when I finally pick up Fallout 4, I'm going to have to record a lot of Fallout 4 for the Patreon guys, because Fallout is the one environment where I don't suck. It's slow, and it's about armor, and it's about stats, and it's all of that, but Fallout is one of the very few environments that I don't suck. You die a lot because it's Fallout, but it's slow enough that I look good doing it. And I can't say that about 98% of the games out there today.
Sure.
So I really hope you're right. I really hope it ends up being some sort of hybrid, because I don't want what Final Fantasy 15 is, which is push this button and then push that button and then look, you throw them across the room. Now what are you gonna do? Bring out some magic. Here we go. Yeah, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So that's the Sony press conference, what we did see, and maybe as importantly what we didn't see. Overall, like, I'm so excited to be a PlayStation owner. There's great games coming, and that's great.
We said this the last 3 years. So glad we bought a PlayStation over the Xbox.
Yeah. For this generation, for how we play games, that's where we need to be. Last generation was the opposite. Last generation was the Xbox 360 was the place we need to be. This generation for us, it's PlayStation 4.
Yeah.
So far as we can only have PlayStation or Xbox, at this point, we're still in the PlayStation camp.
And what's funny is, you know, I've talked a lot about being broke this week, because I am. But we also, let's face it, if we needed to come up with the money to pick up an Xbox One X, we could. I mean, we're adults.
Sure.
We could find that. But I'm glad I don't have to right now.
Yeah. Me too. 100%.
Yeah.
Which is nice. So anyway, we've got the Nintendo Direct coming up in just a little bit, so we need to get to that and we'll cover that.
And there's coffee.
There's coffee.
Holy crap.
Which we also need to get to that for sure. So we're going to go get some coffee and watch Nintendo. We will be back live on Twitch today at 2 p.m. Central Time for our Nintendo press conference, which will be interesting, I guarantee. I don't know which way it's going to go, but it'll be interesting. We'll have a lot to talk about for Nintendo for sure.
Have they said they're doing a Direct?
Yes.
Okay, so it is a Nintendo Direct.
Yeah, I'm almost positive.
They didn't, because I hadn't heard whether it was a Direct or they were in a theater or what. But
I don't know what the presentation is going to look like, but it's Nintendo Direct-ish.
Can I say real quick before we wrap up on that, since we're talking about it? I really hope they steal the show.
I do too.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for Nintendo to come out and blow us away. I'm highly skeptical that's going to happen, but I'm rooting for it. I would love to see it happen.
Yes.
Given that we have a Switch sitting on the table right in front of us.
Right.
Like, yeah, give me more compelling reasons why I should own this device. You've already done it enough with Zelda. I mean, that's enough, but give me more. And so I'm hopeful. I don't know. Nintendo has a chance to quote unquote win E3 in about an hour, but in about an hour we'll have a good idea. If they come out and it's meh, I don't know. Like,
how do we pick a winner?
Yeah. It'll be a good conversation when we get to that point. So, anyway, right now we need to get to setting up for Nintendo, though.
All right, so we will be back later today, as he said. If you want to get in touch with us, you know how to do it by now. We've got all the different ways to get that done. So come see us. Come hang out with us. We're glad to be here. We hope you are enjoying it as well. For right now, I'm Jamie. That's Tommy. This is Gaming Uncensored's continuing coverage of E3 2017. It's the Electronics Entertainment Expo Extravaganza. It's E4. It's only on GamingUncensored.com. And we are out.